VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Dan Friedel has the latest on rescue efforts in Morocco following a deadly earthquake that struck Friday. I have a story on drug traffickers that are using the banana industry to ship cocaine. Gregory Stockel has this week's health and lifestyle report on how gardeners can reduce the risk of fire. Later, Jill Robbins and Gina Bennett bring us the English lesson of the day. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Rescue workers continue to search the wreckage of a large earthquake that struck Morocco Friday. Officials say almost 2,500 were killed in the quake, but that they expect that number will rise. On Monday, Morocco's state news agency reported almost 2,500 others are injured, and it reported more injured people continue to arrive at hospitals. Moroccan soldiers, doctors, and other aid teams are still making their way to the Al Haouz area high in the Atlas Mountains, the epicenter of the earthquake. The area is about 70 kilometers from the city of Marrakech. The United Nations said the magnitude 6.8 earthquake affected 300,000 people. The damage was great because the starting point of the shaking was not far below the ground. The U.S. Geological Survey said it was the strongest quake to strike the North African nation since 1900, and it is reported to be the country's deadliest since 1960, when at least 12,000 people were killed in and near the city of Agadir. So far, Morocco has accepted assistance from four countries: Spain, Qatar, Great Britain, and the United Arab Emirates. Other nations have offered help as well. But the Moroccan government says it wants to avoid a counterproductive lack of coordination by accepting help from too many countries. One survivor, Salah Ancheu, called the earthquake a catastrophe, even as a truckload of soldiers arrived in Amzmiz to help. "We don't know what the future is. The aid remains insufficient," the 28-year-old said. Mountainside homes and the tower of the local mosque fell down. Groups from the Moroccan army left Monday from Amzmiz to move into the small mountain villages. Heavy equipment was sent to clear the roads, and both visitors and residents lined up to give blood. Some news reports said villagers wept as they saw dead bodies being carried through the streets. A number of nations said they were ready, but not yet permitted to send help. The group Rescuers Without Borders said about 100 teams, totaling 3,500 rescuers, are prepared to help. France said four of its citizens died. It has offered assistance, but has not been given permission to send rescuers. In the Czech Republic, 70 rescuers are waiting at an airport for permission to enter Morocco. In Germany, a rescue team of 50 was sent home after waiting at an airport. A spokesperson from the German Foreign Ministry said Morocco's refusal of aid from some nations should not be seen as political. "I'm sure they have thought very carefully about which forces can be deployed and how they can get there," the spokesperson said. French Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna said France has offered more than $5 million in support. She said Morocco's decision on that offer is its own to make and must be respected. Many people continue to sleep outside, fearing smaller earthquakes that often follow a major one. In the village of Imgdal, women and children gathered outside and some kept warm around an open fire on Monday morning. In another village, Tafagate, Hamid Ben Henna said his 8-year-old son died in the quake. He had gone to another room while the family was sharing a meal Friday. The rest of the family survived. On a road near the town of Adasil, close to the center of the quake, one rescue worker was trying to clear the rocks that were preventing vehicles from getting by. He said, "Other roads were in bad shape. We're trying to open them too," said Ayman Coit. People said they dug through the rubble of their homes looking for relatives. They also moved rocks and walls looking for important items. Many of the homes are made from wood, rock, and mud, which made them fall easily when the ground started shaking. One military worker said, "It is difficult to pull people out alive because the walls turned to rubble and did not leave any space for air." UNESCO, the United Nations Cultural Organization, said many historic buildings in both Marrakech and the areas closer to the center of the earthquake were damaged. I'm Dan Friedel.
Ecuador is increasingly at the meeting point of two worldwide trades, bananas and cocaine. The South American country is the world's largest exporter of bananas, with about 6.5 million metric tons a year. Its neighbors, Peru and Colombia, are the world's largest cocaine producers. Drug traffickers find containers filled with bananas, the perfect vehicle to smuggle their product. Drug trafficking has since brought extreme violence across this once peaceful nation. Shootings, murders, kidnappings, and extortions have become parts of daily life. That is especially true in the Pacific port city and banana shipping center of Guayaquil. The country was shocked when Fernando Villavicencio, a presidential candidate known for his tough position on organized crime, was shot to death on August 9th. He had accused the Ecuadorian Los Choneros criminal group and its imprisoned leader of threatening him and his campaign team days before the killing. In addition to being close to cocaine production, drug smugglers from Mexico, Colombia, and the Balkans in Europe have also set up operations in Ecuador. That is because the country uses the U.S. dollar, its laws and institutions are weak, and criminal groups like Los Choneros are ready to work. A record 2,304 metric tons of cocaine was produced in 2021 around the world, mostly in Colombia, Peru, and Bolivia. That year, nearly a third of the cocaine seized by officials in Western and Central Europe came from Ecuador, two times the amounts reported in 2018, found a United Nations report. Large drug seizures have become more common within the past month. European officials have made record-setting seizures after inspecting containers carrying bananas from Ecuador. Officials on August 25th announced Spain's biggest cocaine seizure yet. 9.5 metric tons hidden among boxes of bananas from Ecuador in a refrigerated container. Dutch officials also made their country's largest ever cocaine seizure last month, nearly 8 metric tons, in a container of Ecuadorian bananas. Officials in Greece and Italy also announced seizures of cocaine hidden in Ecuadorian bananas this year. Knowingly or not, banana growers, exporters, shipping companies, port operators, private security companies, customs agents, agriculture officials, police, and buyers can be used by drug traffickers. Some traffickers have created false companies to look like real banana exporters. Others have taken control of legal businesses, including plantations. They have found companies willing to cooperate in trafficking. They have also paid off, threatened, or kidnapped truck drivers and other workers to help get cocaine into shipments. Violent deaths in Ecuador have doubled from 2021 to 2022, when 4,600 died, the most ever recorded in a year. The country is likely to break the yearly record again, with 3,568 violent deaths recorded in the first half of 2023. In Guayaquil, people live in fear. No more than 30% of containers are currently inspected at Ecuadorian ports. President Guillermo Lasso's government says it wants to use scanners on entire containers. 12 of those machines were supposed to be operating already, but that has not happened yet, said National Police General Pablo Ramirez. He is Ecuador's National Director of Anti-Drug Investigations. Jose Hidalgo is Director of the Association of Banana Exporters of Ecuador. He said the industry is more vulnerable to trafficking than other export products because of the number of containers that it uses. He explained that exporters spend about $100 million yearly on security measures. That includes surveillance cameras at plantations, GPS monitoring of trucks, and the identification of land routes that require police patrols to keep criminals away. Still, some exporters have been accused of being involved in trafficking cocaine. The organization behind the cocaine seizure in Spain operated through a banana exporting company in Machala, a city south of Guayaquil. After this story was published in the Associated Press, agriculture and customs officials in Ecuador announced in a statement that they had removed a government-run banana export database. It removed information on export companies considered to be false or incomplete. It also canceled permits of plantations covering 16,000 hectares found to be non-existent.
Invasive grasses might have played a part in the deadly wildfires that burned Lahaina, Hawaii recently. The grasses have taken over land that was once occupied by crops like sugar and pineapple. Michelle Steinberg is Wildfire Division Director at the National Fire Protection Association. She said some plants are more flammable than others. But, she noted, there is no such thing as a fireproof plant. All plants can catch fire under the right conditions. Those conditions include poor pruning, lack of watering, and letting dry, dead plant parts remain on the soil surface in high-risk areas. If you are selecting plants for your garden, knowing which plants offer some fire resistance and which are more flammable can serve you well. Plants that produce flammable substances like aromatic oils, resins, waxes, or sap are among the quickest to catch fire. They will often catch fire even if they have been well watered and cared for. They include bamboo, rosemary, and eucalyptus. Trees with papery bark that falls off, like river birch, are usually more flammable than those without. And fine-needled plants like pine, juniper, and spruce contain saps and resins. Their needle-like leaves increase the risk of fire when left on the ground or on the top of a house. Many grasses are highly flammable. Their ability to ignite increases when they are left to stand dry over winter or during periods without rain. Additionally, too much heat dries out the soil, and under such conditions, many kinds of plants turn into a fire starter. As a group, native plants aren't necessarily less flammable than introduced kinds of plants, Steinberg said. But non-native invasive plants often are a greater fire risk because they spread quickly and are usually left alone by wildlife. The non-native plants spread faster than native plants and often tolerate heat, lack of rain, and heavy rain better. For the best fire resistance, choose deciduous trees like ash, crabapple, and maple over fine-needled trees. Plants like succulents with water-filled leaves are slow to burn. They include ice plants and sedums. Some ground cover plants like ajuga and creeping phlox are also slow burners. The Washington State University Extension Service has published advice for choosing plants that are fire resistant. Qualities that make a plant less likely to burn include high water content in leaves, these ignite and burn more slowly, little or no seasonal gain of dead plant material, open branching, they provide less fuel for fires, fewer total branches and leaves, again, less fuel for fires, slow growing so less pruning is required, to keep open structure as noted above, non-flammable material on the plant, like resins, oil, or wax. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Gregory Stockel joins me now to talk more about this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. Glad to have you on the show, Greg.
I'm happy to be here, Dan.
This week's story told us about which kinds of plants to choose for a garden if you live in a place where wildfires may happen. You use the word prune, but I've heard this word with other meanings than the one provided in the article. Can you tell us more about the word prune and its meanings?
Sure, Dan. A prune is a dried form of the plum fruit that is usually cooked before being eaten. They are not my favorite food, but some people love them. Also, your fingers become pruney when they have been in the water for a long time.
There's another word you used in the story that has multiple meanings. The word bark means the outer surface of a tree. But what are some other meanings of this word?
A bark is the short, loud noise a dog sometimes makes, but humans sometimes bark orders at each other. In that sense, it means to say something in a loud or angry way.
Yeah, I would always hate it as a kid when my parents barked orders at me. Anyway, thanks for joining me today, Greg.
You're welcome. Have a great week, Dan.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Gina, did you hear Anna's having a party?
No, I didn't. It's this weekend?
Yes, and you just gave me an example of what I want to talk about today.
What are we talking about today?
Restating using intonation to clarify what you heard. And you did that by raising your voice at the end of a sentence, like this.
It's this weekend? So it's not really in the question form, where we usually change the order of the subject and verb. Instead, here we are using the same word order, but adding rising intonation to clarify we heard correctly. That's something really useful for people learning English, isn't it?
You bet. In Let's Learn English Lesson 10, we see Ashley going over to Anna's house.
Let me guess. She'll ask about how to get there?
You just did it again.
I'm really good at this. Let's listen.
Hi. Today, my friend Ashley is coming over. I am showing her my new apartment. Oh, that's Ashley calling.
Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Anna. I'm coming to your apartment. Where is your apartment?
My apartment is near the Columbia Heights Metro.
It is near the Columbia Heights Metro?
Yes. Exit the Metro and turn right. Then at the bus station, turn left. Then walk straight ahead.
How many times did you hear Ashley restate what she heard using rising intonation?
I think she did it twice.
It is near the Columbia Heights Metro?
And...
Exit Metro, turn right, turn left, then go straight ahead.
I'm Gina Bennett, and you're listening to Voice of America's Learning English podcast. I think there's another good point we can teach from this lesson, Dr. Jill.
What's that, Gina?
The verb forms are all in the imperative, Sometimes we call it the command form. I get confused when someone gives me directions using a different form.
I know what you mean. So this is just the simple verb, no endings, exit, turn, go. Let's hear how Anna says it again.
Yes, exit the metro and turn right. Then at the bus station, turn left. Then walk straight ahead.
I noticed Anna tried to help Ashley with some more information, a landmark to look for. Listen to what she says about a coffee shop.
Okay, exit metro, turn right, turn left, then go straight ahead?
Yes, my apartment is near a coffee shop.
Okay, see you soon.
Hi, Ashley.
Hello, Anna.
Which coffee shop? There are three coffee shops.
Okay, my apartment is across from a big department store.
A big department store? Ah, I see it.
Hey, Jill, did you notice? Ashley did that thing again with raising her voice at the end of a sentence to make sure she understood about the department store.
Hi, Ashley.
Hello, Anna.
Which coffee shop? There are three coffee shops.
Okay, my apartment is across from a big department store.
A big department store? Ah, I see it.
In the next lesson, lesson 11, we see Marcia is helping Anna find things in her neighborhood. There's the usual question you hear when someone is asking directions that begins with, where is?
Marcia, before we get ice cream, I need to return three books to the library. Where is the library?
It is on this street, on the corner.
That's right. You can ask that way, or you can use another expression. Anna needs to mail some letters, so she asks,
Anna, what are those in the book?
Marcia, these are letters to my family and friends back home. Four letters. Is there a post office near here?
I'm Jill Robbins, and you're listening to Voice of America's Learning English podcast. Marcia helps Anna, but doesn't send her to the post office. Let's listen.
No, the post office is far from here, but there is a mailbox across from the store.
Awesome, let's go. Marcia, now I need to buy stamps.
Do you have cash?
No. Is there a bank near here?
There is a bank behind you.
Now I have cash. I can buy stamps.
That store sells stamps.
Wait here. I have stamps.
Wow, you're fast.
Thank you. Thank you, letters, for sending my words, my love, to my family and friends back home.
Do you have more cash?
I do.
Ice cream!
I love my new neighborhood. Everything is near our apartment, even hair salons and ice cream. Until next time!
I noticed she helped her with two things she needed, money and stamps.
That reminds me, Gina, are you driving to Anna's party on Saturday?
I plan to. Why? Do you need a ride?
You guessed it. That's another kind of question. I asked you a yes-no question, but I really wanted to ask for more information.
Like, your question leads to another one. Can you give me a ride? Sure, I'd be glad to, if you don't mind riding on the back of my motorcycle.
Sounds like fun. See you on Saturday.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.